Welcome to BL Talk, where we discuss issues of importance. These are the matters of concern to minor attracted people in general and boy lovers in particular. Join us every week for a new discussion. Now, here's your host.
Welcome to BL Talk, the weekly podcast where we discuss issues of importance to minor attracted people in general and boy lovers in particular. I'm your host, Zoom Zoom 4, and today joining me for the discussion is a boy's exo, dragon lover, Lenin72, and Wolf Runner. Welcome, guys. Today, the topic we're talking about is Nambla. And that might mean nothing to some people, but to some of you, that means a whole lot. And a lot comes to mind just from those six little letters. That is the North American Man-Boy Love Association, which, yes, it's true. There is such a thing as a formal group of boy lovers who started on June 2nd, 1978, with offices in New York and San Francisco. And I don't know how they advertised at first. I'm guessing like through gay magazines and stuff is how people found them. Because at the time there was, like, with those magazines and with the 70s, there was a whole lot going on as far as permissiveness. The hysteria that we know today hadn't really started. It was just about to start. It was like the calm before the storm, and was, I guess, the perfect time for Nambla to start. It was for boy lovers. People who liked only males up to a certain age, not general gays who liked adults. And they didn't have the internet at the time, websites and stuff. So this was really the only way for BLs to reach each other. And indeed, this is how a lot of maybe some of us here first heard about BL. Maybe it's from hearing about Nambla and their whole thing. And actually, I think Dragon Lover, isn't that how you first found out about what boy love was all about and that it was a real thing? Didn't you see them on TV, you said?
Yes, I did see them on TV. It was the Sally Jesse Raphael show. She was a...
When was this?
About 1995. It was after my mom died. It was 96, 97 in there.
Okay. And so actually groups of Nambla went on the Sally Jesse Raphael show?
Yes. The director at the time was there, and I think his vice, an assistant director and a couple other members of management. They had to really, really fight to defend themselves on that radio show.
And, it was a radio show, not TV.
No, I'm sorry. I'm elsewhere. It was a TV show.
Okay, now, was it set up just to make them look bad? Like, they're sitting ducks and everyone is just piling on them and they, or did they actually get to have their say? I mean, did they get a fair say, a fair chance to speak?
Not really, no. I mean, they really had to say, to Sally, they were like, can you get these people to please be quiet? We're trying to defend ourselves here, but I can't do it if you're making all this noise.
Yeah.
I mean, and she apologized half-heartedly, and she got the audience to settle down and threw some very tough questions at the director and assistant director. Uh-huh. But they were ready with answers, and that's what
they have to be.
They were ready on spot with answers, and that's what caught my attention about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that's before the days of the internet. So I kind of had to go through like libraries and try to find references to it.
So you wanted to find out more about it? Is that it?
Yeah.
You were interested in it?
That's right. Uh-huh. I was very interested because I felt like that organization would be a good fit for me because now I know what I had. I was a boy lover, not a common child molester.
Oh, and it showed you a difference.
Oh, yes. Yeah, like, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, absolutely. It had a name now.
Yeah.
I hated to think that I might be just a common child molester, but the references that they made on the TV show and the stuff that I finally was able to read, I'm not just a common child molester. You know, I am a boy lover.
So it showed you that people who have these feelings are regular people and not like these caricatures that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That these are real people and they're normal people.
Yes.
And you're hearing about them not from being arrested or whatever crime they perpetrated, but they're speaking out their point of view from just wanting to reach out to people and get the word out.
Absolutely. That's what they were all about. So I wrote down their address and phone number, and I went home. And I called the number, and there was no answer, but there was an answering machine. So I left the message and left my number thinking, they're never going to call me back. 2 hours later, I got a call from the director that was on that TV show.
Wow.
He called me right back within 2 hours. That impressed me. That really impressed me.
What did he say?
He introduced himself as Leland somebody. I forget his last name now.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah.
He called me, and we talked a good, like 30, 40 minutes. About
was he into you, like wanting to know how where you were coming from and what you were all about?
Oh, absolutely. Like, absolutely.
Did he invite you to join? Or
Yes,
or
he did. It? Yes, he okay. did. And I did.
Okay, you joined.
Yes.
And how did that, how do you, without the web, like, how did you join, like, back then? Was it like, how did that work?
They mailed me a form that I had to fill out. And, of course, it was a very plain form. They didn't have their return address on it. So I got the form, and I filled it out. It seemed like very basic questions. But I had to write an essay about why I think I'm a boy lover.
Oh, good idea. Yeah. Okay. So, and, you know, because they probably get people trying to infiltrate.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to discern, you know, who's genuine and who's not. And that's not easy sometimes.
Yeah, that is not easy.
So so having some writer an essay is a good idea, and I guess that they accepted your essay and
yes, I also had to pay a $40 registration fee, which you know that I wasn't worried about that. I paid it and mailed in the form, and I got a thing about a month later. Maybe I got a thing back saying that You know, after they reviewed my application very carefully, they had accepted me into the organization.
Oh, wow. Okay, now what did acceptance mean? What do you get? Like, what do you take part in things like social things, or were you on, like, say, the subscription to their magazine, the NAMBA Bulletin? What did they give you? What do you get for the money or
for that? Just being a member, they would send the letter out to you like once a month or something like that, and you were eligible to come to events if you wanted to, like conferences.
Right, and they were holding conferences like all throughout the 90s.
Oh yes, yes, I was invited, and when they came to Pennsylvania, They were in Philadelphia, and I actually went to that conference.
Oh, wow.
And it was a spectacular thing. It really was.
What was it? Like in a hotel? A conference room in a hotel? Or
yes.
Where was it? Like, okay.
It was at a hotel called the 12 Caesars Hotel in Philly. They had rented out the biggest room they could get. So it was me, and I saw Leland, I saw all of his assistants, and a lot of other people.
Really? A lot? These were all grown men, right, I would assume?
Yes, all grown men.
And they're like from all walks of life, probably, like just everything from A to Z?
Everything from A to Z. I mean, there was a homeless guy there, for God's sakes. And there were very rich people there, too. Doctors, lawyers, just business owners. And they came from all walks of life. Great food, great wine, stuff like that. Had champagne. And we listened to, speeches given by Leland and company. And they invited people up to speak if they wanted to. I was a slight too inebriated to do that. So
did they invite you to come up and speak though?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. But you declined it.
Well, they didn't ask me personally. They asked the whole audience. If anybody wants to come up, feel free. And a good like 10, 15 people actually went up there and spoke, and they were just like me. I was amazed. Just like me,
when they talked about their feelings.
Yes.
Like what they felt and that kind of thing.
Yep. What they felt, what they dreamed about, stuff like that, what kind of jobs they had that might involve children like mine. So, yeah, I mean, all the boxes were ticked,
Was there like, how when you join like a forum or a board now and you're not supposed to give too much personal information. Did they have that thing going on where like, don't tell us your last name or don't put your exact address or phone number, things like that? Was it like that? Or did they want you to give your whole identification up? How do they approach that?
No, they did not want you to give your identification up. They recommended first names. And if you didn't want to use your first name, just say John or Joe or whatever. And, the registration forms that you fill out, you have to have your information, but they're not going to give it out. It's very well guarded.
It's well guarded.
So, yep, well guarded, and I felt like it was safe. So,
yeah, you felt safe with it, okay. And now I'm curious about this. The physical setting. Apparently, they didn't have like a neon sign out in front saying NAMBLA meeting, because I can imagine that would attract a lot of hatred.
Yes.
So were they trying to be discreet about it in that way, or did they just not seem overly concerned about just basic security?
They were trying to keep the noise about it down to a minimum. They didn't want you talking like if you went for a smoke break or something like that, they didn't want you talking about the meeting outside of the hotel.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was before cell phones, of course. So they had like phone areas where you could pick up a phone, but you were not supposed to discuss what was going on at the hotel. It was very secret, but it was very successful.
Good. So it was a successful meeting and you left feeling good about it.
Oh my God. I felt great. Felt great. I collected so many names and phone numbers. It was awesome.
Wow. Okay. So you had kind of a active BL life going on before the internet and before you got online to begin with, because of NAMBLA and what they're doing. So after all this time, let me ask you, what do you think about them now?
I wished things didn't turn out the way they did for them. I believe that they had great intentions. I believe they really did. And if I didn't, I'd say so. But they had good intentions. But unfortunately, things kind of got thrown a curve, and now it is what it is. I feel bad for them. I do.
Yeah. Would you say maybe they were a little bit naive, thinking that they're going to be accepted and that maybe things would change, or do you understand where they're coming from? Because at the time, it seemed like things were really promising.
I felt a bit of naivete there. I really did.
I guess everyone was.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone is at some point in their life.
They were hoping, they were very hopeful that Boylove would be accepted into society as homosexuality and lesbianism.
Did they feel like a bond with the homosexuals and the gay pride crowd and all that?
Yes, they did. There were many, many gay men there, really. A lot of gay men who...
There's a lot of famous gay men who support, who have gone on record as supporting it.
Oh, yes.
And there's like Oscar Wilde and Allen Ginsberg and names like that, famous gay authors of the past who were also boy lovers or who sympathized with boy love.
Absolutely.
And like I was saying, there was no internet at the time. So for boy lovers to get together, there had to be something. And they gave it their best shot. And I know that now a lot of boy lovers have a negative kind of view of them. They feel like that NAMBL has given boy love itself a bad name. Let me ask XO. I know that you kind of have some opinion of them. Do you want to go ahead and talk about that?
I was never a member of NAMBLA.
Did you have a chance to join?
I certainly could have, but I wished to. If I had wished to do so, I certainly could have.
What stopped you? Was there anything?
What stopped me? Back in those days, and that was quite a while ago, it was a different atmosphere. I happen to live in still live in the same city. That was a fairly gay friendly city, meaning friendly to homosexuals. When I first moved here, and these guys, there were two guys that owned these nightclubs, and they had three different locations that I know of between 1981 and like 2005. And they were touted as being an all-age gay nightclub.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about that.
Yeah.
All-age. Okay, so boys are welcome. And they don't serve alcohol, I assume. So
they did not serve alcohol. Right. If you could pay the entrance fee, then you could get in with a 10-year-old.
Yeah. Did people go in with 10-year-olds? I'm reaching there, but to a conclusion, but I'm sure you did see some boys there. I mean,
there were, and every Friday and Saturday night, there would be a long line of 13, 14, 15 year old boys standing out in front, hoping to get a date.
Yeah. These were gay boys who were, they already knew what they wanted and they were going for it.
Yeah.
So they had that opportunity.
There's a thing about that. And during that time, NAMBLA was labeled by the gay community as not being a gay organization. And they specifically said, they are not part of our community, and we thoroughly reject their efforts to insinuate that pedophilia is an issue related to gay and lesbian civil rights.
Yeah, that's right.
And NAMBLA countered with, man boy love is by definition homosexual. And they referred to the Western homosexual tradition from Socrates to Wilde to, you know, many of the other societies that do allow that. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is that pedophilia, to be a pedophile by definition is a an adult male or female who are attracted to boys or girls or boys and girls. And that's really what a pedophile is. If you're not interested in girls or only boys, then you're not technically a pedophile. You're a pederast. It's a totally different thing.
Well, a pederast is a type of pedophile.
No.
anyone who's attracted to and children of any gender is considered a pedophile. You don't have to only like girls or only like boys.
That's the original definition of the definition now. But
you're right, pederast is much more accurate.
And it's got a longer history. Those are the ones that they're talking about that went back to Greece and Rome and that kind of stuff. That was pederasty. That was not pedophilia. Okay. And another point is that the term gay, that's one that just come up in the last 40 or 50 years or whatever. And the thing is that is an affectation. That is an assumed set of mannerisms and speech and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's known as a cultural marker. And what that does is it identifies one gay guy to another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but this thing of the flamboyant, flashing gay guy, you know, that's not how men really act.
There's two types of homosexuality that have existed throughout history, and that's faggotry and pederasty. So you have the faggots and no offense, and pederasts, no offense there either.
But just because someone is a homosexual does not make them semi-feminized.
The men who like adult men seem to be like women themselves, but the men who like boys seem to be more masculine.
And that's the thing, is that those gay men, that's not the way men act. That's an assumed set of actions. Behaviors.
Okay. And then you're saying that's to signal to the rest of the world that they are gay, that they do that on purpose, that it's like an adopted set of behaviors.
It's an adopted set of behaviors, exactly. It's called an affectation.
Okay. Affectation, okay.
Affectation, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, men who like boys, they're not generally not interested in women, and many of them are not interested in men. They're only interested in boys.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so definitely a boy lover would be a homosexual.
Uh-huh.
But if you don't subscribe to that set of gay behaviors and the gay lifestyle and stuff, then really, are you gay? You are homosexual, but you're not gay. You know, I have even known men, and I had a friend, one particular friend that I'm thinking of in my head right now, who was a homosexual, and he liked men.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't live the gay lifestyle either. He didn't talk like gay, and act like gay, and look like gay. He wasn't gay, but he was a homosexual.
Oh, but he liked men.
He liked men.
Okay. Well, this is just like, you know, word games, which is fine. I understand what you mean. But
no, they're not word. They're not just word games.
Word games, but
they're actual concepts.
But they're just words. I mean, gay is supposed to mean just liking the same sex, but you're saying it's evolved into something else, and that's fine. You know?
Yeah. The word gay is applied to everyone who is homosexual.
Right, like boy lovers don't consider themselves gay because they don't like adult men.
Most boy lovers do not really consider themselves gay.
Don't like
not
the term
live gay.
Gay
lifestyle.
Right. But NAMBLA still was trying to become part of the gay movement because
and that was a mistake.
You think that was a mistake? who should they have joined up with instead, or whose coattails should they have tried to ride, if anyone's, if not the gays?
Why do they have to ride a coattail at all?
They don't have to, right? They should try to be their own thing?
Well, you know.
Well, they wanted to ride the same bus that the gays were riding, too.
Well, they wanted to because they were seeing what inroads the gay community was making socially.
Right.
Okay, so this seemed like a good idea to float in on that.
But people say with the gays, it's fine what they do. But
for the
don't
same
touch my
reason,
kid.
The gay community disavowed sort of pedophilia, if you will, that's what they call it, and men who love boys, they threw us under the bus because of the stigma, because of the social feeling against man-boy love, they chucked off that part of it in order to gain their acceptance.
Right.
Okay. I spent most of my adult life as a boy lover, an active boy lover, and I knew other boy lovers, but I was never part of an organization. And in fact, NAMBLA was so what I would call overt and public that I was actually afraid to get involved with them.
Yeah, right. There's like a fear that if you get involved with them, your name's going to go on some list, and that'll come up sometime in the future when, you know, say
why don't I just put a sign on my front lawn?
Might as well put a sign on the front lawn, right?
Yeah.
That's what they get a lot of flack for now with people, you know, but people now who criticize them are coming from a point of view of they know they can just get online and have the same effect and be completely anonymous. So they're thinking, well, why would I have to join a group like that? But they have to remember that group came out before the internet, and there was really no other way for boy lovers to contact each other. Let me move on to Wolf Runner. He said earlier that you had an opinion about them. I'm curious, what is it? What do you have to say about NAMBLA?
Well, I've heard a few different things about NAMBLA, and things I hear and stories I read, I kind of take with a grain of salt, because not everything is the truth.
You're talking about the negative stories. They talk about boys missing or boy was murdered, and it was a NAMBLA member.
Well, negative or positive. It's usually skewed one way.
True, yeah.
Just like anything political would be.
Right.
The first time I heard about NAMBLA was through somebody at work. Now, I knew I had my feelings, and I really didn't know how to categorize it up until this point. Somebody who was kind of religious was talking with another worker and said something about NAMBLA and said, yes, there's actually an organization for man-boy love. And I was curious, and I was like, oh, go on.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I first found out about NAMBLA, and then that's basically when negative things started coming out. So I kind of formed an opinion, but then I backtracked, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's exactly what we needed. We kind of needed to go about it in a different way, but that's how the gay community got where they're at. That's how the transgender got where they're at.
Right.
You know, is groups like that stood together and said, hey, we're normal people. It's just we're this way.
Yeah.
So if they kind of took a different direction, I would say.
Like, what could they have done differently,
how to achieve their goals.
Uh-huh.
I think it would have been a lot better organization than it turned out to be.
Do you think they were too blatant? Maybe they should have been maybe more subtle at first?
Or? They should have been a little bit more conservative and slowed down a little bit. They were on the fast track, and that wasn't the way to go, especially for that.
Well, yeah, let me say to any listeners who don't know that NAMBLA they propose a total ban on age of consent. No age of consent law whatsoever is what they want to banish the age of consent, not lower it, but totally banish it. And so that, of course, is, like you said, maybe going too fast.
Yes.
You know, society's not ready for that yet. And so, yeah, for them to call for that and to call for it publicly in this day and age is, of course, going to get lots of tomatoes thrown their way. If they're lucky, tomatoes, you know. I mean, the way people talk, you know, online, you know, they'd be facing bullets, you would think.
Right.
The hatred that you read about, that you see, and the things that people say, you know, the keyboard warriors commenting online, you know, about, you know, stringing them up by their guts and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of hatred, and NAMBLA seems to be the poster boy for that hatred for all boy lovers. So the thing is, with like basically any boy lover, I think the reason why many of us each have an opinion on NAMBLA is because we kind of think, well, people think of boy love as NAMBLA, and then if they were to meet you and know that you were a boy lover, they would probably try to associate you with that, which that's full of negative publicity, and you know we don't want that, and so. Like for a lot of boy lovers today who grew up, you know, post NAMBLA and after they kind of faded away and just know them sort of like as a historical thing, then it's kind of like they're done. Like, you know, there have to be something new with a new name to get respect, you know, or to get a different perspective from people to look at it. That's why they've come up with the name MAPS instead of pedophiles, you know, because people with, you know, those feelings have to be referred to in some with some label. And so, you know, MAPS makes it kind of takes that edge off. And people also hate pederasts just as much as pedophiles, if not more. They consider it the same thing, you know, still wanting to be with a minor. And that's what groups like NAMBLA have had problem with. Like you said, Wolfrunner, the gays and the transgenders, they form the groups, but those groups were dealing with adults only. And this is a big problem once children are involved and saying that we want to, you know, have partners who are underage or under 18. That's when they're supposed to not be ready, you know, to be people yet. You know, they still have to grow up, you know.
Right, right.
But we can't help it. We don't like grown-ups. I mean, it's just our attraction, emotional and physical, is to the younger ones. But let me ask you now, Lennon, sorry I had to make you wait all the time. Do you have an opinion on NAMBLA? What do you think about them? And do you want to tell us about the first time you heard about them?
Oh, boy. Boy, it's a lot. I don't know how to get all of it out of my mouth, honestly.
Well, just a part of it, then.
I'm sorry?
A part of it, just a section of what you're thinking about.
Well, I think when I first heard of NAMBLA, it must have been late 80s, early 90s. Some of my memory is a bit foggy about this. You know, some people, when they talk about, like when I first heard the word pedophile, I had no particular feeling about that. I didn't see him as bad or good. But then later I'm finding out people had a lot of negative viewpoints about it. And yeah. Then I'd be hearing about NAMBLA and all that. Well, fast forward a number of years later, I ended up joining for a brief period.
Okay.
Unlike Dragon Lover, I did get a phone call back, spoke to a guy. Unlike Dragon Lover, I never did get to meet any of them in person.
But you did join, though, like through the mail?
I was for a brief period. Then my arrest and all of that, and I had to sift through a lot of stuff in my mind as a result of all that, and all I had to go through as a result of all that. Mm-hmm. And I hear a lot of things about NAMBLA, and I'm often left in my head now wondering, okay, how much of this is true and how much of it is not true?
You mean the stories you read about, like of the boy who was murdered and it was a suspected NAMBLA member?
And we know Ethan Patz was not murdered by NAMBLA. We know that now, yes.
Right. But even the truth doesn't matter. It's just the fact that the headline is what it is. And the
right.
It's like confirmed people's worst fears. You know, they have to get my kid. They got that kid. You know, I got to keep him away from mine.
But I tell you what, when I looked them up, and I got to tell you something. I was a little apprehensive, but you know, my curiosity was up. And
was he apprehensive someone else finding out that you joined? Like you wanted to
yeah,
keep those
stuff
secrets?
like that. Yeah. Oh, when I looked up and I saw what they were about and what they had to say, and I'm thinking to myself, hell, these guys ain't so bad. I agree with all of this.
Right. Yeah. They sound very reasonable. They're good at that. If you've read their, like, their website and read their statements, they make it just sound all so completely natural and normal.
Yeah.
Which good for them. I mean, I've kind of learned from that, you know, in my own speaking of the subject. I've taken some pointers from them. But they're just talking to a brick wall, like Dragon Lover said when they went on the TV show and they were just facing a chorus of hatred so loud that they couldn't even speak above it. There's a problem with security. You generally, like, especially, you know, online we're anonymous, but in person with the way they're doing things, people would have to worry about their physical safety, you know, if these meetings were advertised or if they knew that you were like a member of it. I think you were talking about how that affected you or what?
Yeah. You know, I had my concerns about that, but they kind of reassured me I'd be all right. Nothing bad ever happened. So I had stuff sent to me through the mail and all that.
Was this in the 90s?
This was not during the 90s. It was way later. Okay. This must have been 2011, I'm thinking.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And they were still functioning. They were still meeting.
I don't know if they were still meeting or not by that time. But you know, I could, you know, I would get some old issues and stuff as well as the newer ones. And it was kind of cool. And I did all that. But like I said, after the arrest and everything, I had to go through a process and things on it. And then, you know, the part about, and there was another thing that was really interesting to me is, you know, what actually did happen between NAMBLA and the LGBT community. I just found that to be of interest because I was always hearing different stories. Oh, well, what's the truth, you know?
Were you a part of the LGBT community?
What's that? Am I or was I? Is that what you're asking?
Well, yeah, like looking back on it, like would you do that again or was that just kind of like being naive at the time?
With the NAMBLA thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'd do it again. The BL community has grown so much, and I've kind of branched out to the other parts of the community, I guess. I suppose you could say. Sometimes I think it would be kind of cool to get in there and get some of the stuff that they sell and stuff. But again, I find myself going back sometimes like, God, you know, everybody knows who they are. And
right. We're in a bad reputation.
Yeah.
That's likely to come along with it.
Yeah, but I don't know. Nothing really bad ever happened to me as a result then.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't see myself doing it right now because, like I said, I'm involved in the community at large pretty much now, and I don't want to take on too much. But I think if it's not mistaken, aren't they pretty much like in more of an archive now than anything else because they're pretty inactive?
Yeah, they had offices, and now they've just – been reduced to like a P.O. box in San Francisco. And they don't meet physically. They don't have the physical meetings anymore. Yeah, I guess I don't know if they still put out the NAMBLA bulletin or how frequently that published or publishes. I mean, it's hard to find information about it. Their website is pretty bare.
I've been on the site and they're still going. But
someone's still paying the bills for the basics to exist.
Yeah, I mean, somebody is.
But you would think that with the growth of like the boards and forums and all these chats and groups and stuff and like Discord and Telegram and all that, the community is so splintered now. It's like it's not unified in any kind of way. But
no.
they are still the standard bearers for boy love as far as the general public knows, you know, or thinks about. And
you got to think back to the gay community too. It was pretty splintered when it started, I think. Like there was a time when trans was not welcomed into the gay community at all.
Right.
And a lot of them were trying to distance themselves from anyone who identified as trans, if it was even a word then, but I think you know the gist of what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like what was it? The Mattachine Society and whatnot. Very different.
Yeah, yeah.
From the gay community as we come to know it today.
Right. It's very not mainstream like we know it today.
And Harry Hay, he was a BL and he was very active in the gay community of that time.
Yeah. He's the one who famously said, NAMBLA walks with me or something like that.
Yes, that was him.
That was as a result of NAMBLA being excluded from the pride marches, which he disagreed with.
You know, the trans issue is a totally different thing, but has bearing on homosexuality and man boy loving, etc. I did some research on that one time, and the youngest person that I was able to find that was ever allowed to have sex change surgery was a 12-year-old German boy named Tim, who transitioned into Kim. But here's the thing. This is like double standards up and down the scale. We're going to allow a 12-year-old boy to decide of his own volition that he wants to be a girl, and then they do the surgery on him.
Surgery, right.
But if that same boy decided that he wanted to get into a man-boy relationship, that would not go. So,
no.
I have to ask, which one has the most severe and long-lasting consequences? It isn't the man-boy relationship.
What a double standard.
Very different.
That's true. Because that kind of gives us a leg up in our argument, because we always face the same thing, is that the other groups don't involve children, and that we do. But now that we're seeing that start to involve children, we can point to that as hypocrisy and as unfairness and be correct.
Exactly.
So
I was going to say something I wanted to ask. Okay, what is the hypocritical thing we're seeing here? How are we equating this with our movement?
Because a 12-year-old cannot be in a relationship with a man, according to society, but a 12-year-old can decide to be a girl and have a sex change.
Okay. You see, the thing is, I see, and this is one thing where I've had somewhat of a, where I kind of had room to pause as to where the gay community is now, is, see, I think one thing is having to do with romance and sexuality, and another having to do with gender or gender identity. And it's like, I sometimes it's like, should it be a part of the same thing? Why is it a part of the same thing?
Well, they're saying that because kids don't know what they want when they want to be with us. But if they want that, then they do know what they want. And that doesn't make sense, because their argument that the kids don't know what they want across the board without picking and choosing.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. But I'll say this, though. Here's a fraction of the trans community you hear very little about. There are some who make the transition and do not regret, but there are some who do and will later on tell you, I think I made that decision at too early of an age. I should not have made that decision so early, because now they've made the decision and they can't go back.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's what Exo was talking about with the long-lasting thing.
I brought this up before in a different discussion, where you can't have one and not the other. You can't be transgender or gay and involve children in it, and then go, well, they're too young for this or they're too young for that. But they're not too young to transition from one sex to another.
Right.
How do you explain that to a confused child?
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
I also know the other side of it, because I had a roommate who at 7 years old knew he wanted to be a girl. And he would come to breakfast in a nightgown. And, I mean, it was what it was. He knew all about me. And I knew all about him.
He knew all about you, and he wasn't judgmental?
Right. We had long talks, and he explained his position, and I explained mine. But to say Well, my son at 7 years old wants to become a girl, and you're going to let him, and you're not going to talk to him about sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
That's just setting him up for years of therapy when he's 15.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Potentially. Right.
You have to explain it all to them. They have to understand the whole thing. And sex goes along with gender and sexuality. It's all one package. You can't have different packages. This is,
you know, one thing I
it's one big box.
I think, you know, one thing I think people should keep in mind, though, is and I've mentioned this on one of my, you know, sites that I'm a moderator of, one of the BL sites. I had said, you know, when someone had asked a question at one time, I thought this was a pretty good one. You had a BL friend or a youth, well, or a youth friend, let's say, and is male, and they decide, well, or if you were a GL, it could be the other way around, where he says, well, I think I want to transition to, you know, female or whatnot. How would you feel about it? My answer was basically this, that they should think long and hard about it first and foremost, but also let them know, hey, you can be a male who just likes to dress in women's clothes. You don't necessarily have to transition.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's okay. So I think sometimes people need to stop and ask themselves, am I really transgender, or do I just happen to like a couple of feminine things or so-called feminine things?
Yeah. That reminds me of a friend I've had since high school, and he started cross-dressing like about 10 years or so after high school, and told us, who were like his close friends, that he didn't know whether he wanted to look like this, and he showed like a picture of a man in a suit on cover of GQ. He said, or look like this, and he showed a picture of a Victoria's Secret model. And we said, well, you know, whatever you decide, you know, but he liked cross-dressing. And that's what I thought all it was at first. And then he started talking about how he actually wanted to be a woman. So I think he was just like sort of encouraged by the acceptance of transgenderism. And so he said, well, since it's so accepted, I guess I might as well take the plunge.
Okay. How old was he?
Oh, 30-something.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah, no, not these are not kids, but when we talk about involving kids and how we shouldn't be so ostracized for that, we can point to, like Wolf or XO was saying, the transgender kids, you know, and how the transgender movement has embraced letting kids decide that they want to they want to transfer, whatever it's called, but they can't decide that they want to be in a relationship with an adult. That just seems like a double standard. Seems hypocritical, like we said. And we'll just have to see how this plays out. We'll be making this point more and more as time goes on. But I want to ask you guys anything else you'll have to say about it?
Well, you know, I did meet some. This person wasn't a kid, mind you, when I first met her. Woman, you know, I went into a gay bar once, and I met this lady, and I remember, you know, actually spent the night in my place and stuff, and we became friends. Now, first time I met the person, I thought, lady, well, I'm a man. Okay, no problem. But we were friends, you know, we were not romantically or sexually involved in whatever way. We were just friends.
Yeah.
Did stay the night at my place once. I had a great time. I liked this person. And then years later, I saw again at Gay Pride. Well, I transitioned to female. And I was kind of surprised, because when I first met the person, it was like, I'm a man. I know I'm a man. And now that always plays in my mind. I'm like, how is it? You know, you're a man. Then years later, nah, no, I'm not.
And the thing that's interesting, because the thing about my friend who I just described was very heterosexual. Fell in love with women left and right. And the love of his life was, you know, some chick, and not the slightest bit gay. But he wanted to be a woman too. So, and a lot of our friends mistakenly thought he was gay, which he wasn't at all. They assumed that since he was wearing the women's clothes that you know, he must have been. But that wasn't the case. And it just goes to show, I mean, everyone's unique. The whole thing is very complicated, you know, with individual
oh,
people.
Oh, and, it is. It is.
But because, you know, they say that the human spectrum of sexuality is just very, very diverse. And even amongst us, BLs, you know, we're all different. We all have our own unique tastes, even within boys, you know, the types of boys that we like or don't like or age and all of that. But in conclusion, I guess I'll say about NAMBLA, they did what they had to do at the time and what they thought was right. And they saw a chance and they went for it. And they made history. You know, it's too bad that with all the negative publicity that they've gotten in over the years, that they are still the one thing people think of when they think of boy love. I mean, there should be something else. And actually, let me say real quick that I did think of starting my own group back in 2016. It was called Enable, I-N-A-B-L. That's International Association of Boy Lovers. And it's supposed to be like enable, like, you know, have a double meaning, like enabled, you know. So have that like – like how, you know, you buy a Hyundai Excel, doesn't go very fast, but, you know, it's called the Excel, so you might think it does. You know, it's the name play. So that's what that was all about. And I wanted it to be the fact that it's international, not just like North American, because actually there are other BL groups like in Europe and Russia and Asia and places like that, that in Australia that we haven't heard about, but they're the NAMBLA equivalent of like of their countries. Thanks, guys, for being here. Thank you, Boys XO, Dragon Lover, Lennon 72, and Wolf Runner. I appreciate y'all and your stories. And I want to remind everyone that you can hear new episodes of BL Talk every Wednesday on the Slide Zone with a Boys XO, otherwise known as DJ XO, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. As well as after that, you can hear every new episode of BL Talk at the official website, bl-talk.com, and at the BL Library, bl-library.org. This is Zoom 4, and I'm signing off. I want to say thanks to you guys and see you next week.
All right, see you later. Have a good one.
Bye.
See you next week.
The opinions and viewpoints expressed on BL Talk are solely those of the individual participant or speaker and do not reflect the official stance of Wired PM Radio or any of its affiliates.